accession number 28896, Reel 20.
Mr. Blewitt, Reel 20. So you got this diphtheria, and of course in your weakened state, it was pretty serious.
Well, it was serious. That serious, they sent a telegraph home to say I was dangerously ill and more or less to expect the worst, I think. And I always remember I got put back after being there maybe a week or so, and I got put back into the main ward. And there was a padre who used to come round saying different things like, how are you and all that. And I was still very weak and whatnot. And I think I must have been weaker than what I actually felt. Worse, I should have said, than I actually was. And because I remember him coming round. He used to come round every day. And he used to come round the beds on the night and ask how you were, and good evening, when he passed, like. And when he come to me, how are you feeling? I said, so. And he said, goodbye. And I thought, after he'd gone, I was near the end of the... I thought to myself, goodbye. I said, must be worse than what I thought. And it does leave me in an awakened state, because the same night, during the night, I wanted to go to the toilet. I wanted a bottle, actually. And like I said, the orderlies, they weren't too happy about being there on a night. So, and I was shouting, seemed to shout for ages, and this bloke coming, what's the matter? I said, I want a bottle. Well, can't you go to the toilet, he said. I said, where's the toilet? I didn't know where the toilet was. He said, just through there. I said, and he went. And I thought, all right. So I got up. Well, you weren't supposed, I didn't know at the time, you weren't supposed to leave your bed, especially in the state I was in. You're supposed to be laid flat on your back. But I struggled up, and when I stood, you know, I was all over the place, and I was making my way to the toilet, just on the bed, reach out and get another bed. Eventually, I got there. I come back, and I was really exhausted. And just as I was getting back into bed, one of the sisters, the nurses, come round. What are you doing? And she said, what are you doing? And I said, I've had to go to the toilet. Who? You're supposed to be in your bed. You're supposed to be laid flat. Who said you had to go to the toilet? And I said, well, I wanted a bottle, and the orderly said to go to the toilet. Oh, right. Oh. So I don't know what happened after that with the orderly. I never ever saw him again. So the procedure after that was they used to put a bottle and a bedpan under your bed. So as far as I was concerned, so I didn't have to get up. I just reached down under the bed and used the bottle.
Were the orderlies uncooperative in that way, basically?
Most of them were very good. But like I say, during the day, they were fine. It was on a night when they seemed as though they wanted their sleep, and you would expect it to sleep as well.
Presumably, some would be on night duty.
Oh, yeah, there was sex there. There would be. But the ones I seemed to get, they weren't too happy about it.
Were these RAMC, orderlies?
RAMC, yeah. The sisters, the nurses, they were brilliant. Brilliant. I'm afraid I put the fear of God up to one of them when I'd started, because she was just giving us some medication, whatever it was, when I started pulling the sheets and the mosquito nets down. And I remember she stepped back like and shouted for this big hefty fella to come in. I apologised to her afterward, but she said, oh, it's just one of them things.
Was there a regime, a military-style regime in the hospital? You know, you woke at certain times and what have you?
Not there. There wasn't much there. But then, after a bit, I can't remember exactly again, I got evacuated again. A Red Cross ship back to Africa. And I was evacuated back to a place called, I knew very well by going there, was Bourne. It was just the next port up from Algiers. And were put into another hospital there. We were put into ambulance when we got off the ship and then taken up to this place. And I was still weak. And that was when the medical officer come round. And he was saying, you know, get on your, lay down flat on your knee. When I told him about this, he said, have you had any setbacks or anything? And I said, no. I said, I had to get up once to go to the toilet. The toilet! He went bad. You had to be on your back and flat, and that was it. Stay there. So, there was quite a few, apparently must have had this treatment. Because I'd only been in the ward, and it was the same day or the next day, maybe the next day, and this nurse come in with a tray and a bloody great long syringe. It seemed to be about a foot long in my eyes. And all the lads who were in there, and they said, "Oh, you're gonna get it now," you know. And I thought, what? Obviously they'd had it, or they knew about it. And so she come down to my bed, pulled the curtains on, she said, which side do you want it? I said, what do you mean? Which, in your buttocks, like which side, left or right? And I said, you know, right, we'll try this side. And she got there. I didn't want to look at it. It looked massive. And anyway, she gave us this injection. I think it lasted, I think it was 8 hours or something. But I remember she come back during the night and give me another one.
Did you know what you've been injected with?
No. All I know is a bloody big needle in his skin. And it was sore because I was, that night, and she said, the next time she come, well, that day, and then the night she come and she said, I'll give it in this one. So it was left, right. And I had about, seemed to be about, and now then I started to pull round a bit, man. But they were sore as hell, you know. He didn't know, oh, not again, yeah. Didn't know which way to go to be comfortable, like, you know, and even though you're in a bed.
Needles were quite blunt in those days, weren't they? They weren't the sharp needles of today, were they?
Oh, no. I just imagined it, looking back. She had this tray, and this needle seemed to take up most of the tray. And I was quite happy when I come off it, and just going back on normal.
You wouldn't be able to write home for quite a while.
Well, once I did that, once I'd got over this bit, I started writing.
Did they inform your parents of your progress? I mean, they've told them you're seriously ill. Did they do anything after that?
No.
So they would be sitting at home wondering whether you were alive or not?
Yeah. When I got I started writing letters, and I said I was in a hospital, and I didn't say I'd been evacuated to another one. I just said I was in this hospital. I'm telling lies. The hospital, it was the 66th General, it was in Africa. That was when I sent the telegram. So that was when I must have been getting the needles and whatnot. And then I started writing, you know, to say, you know, pulling round and all the rest of it, like. And then I did start to get better. But there was an incident happened. The hospital staff were playing that a bit of a football pitch, and that they were playing against some other team, I don't know. And so that we were dressed in these blues, reds and red, white and blue thing, you know, the uniform blue, and just to go, we're allowed to go and watch them. And a few of us just watching, and it just so happened that the ball come over behind the goal to where we were. So I thought, oh, okay. Belted it back. And I maybe kicked it from about here to where, you know. I was that weak. And just it happened, the medical officer, he was coming round the side and he seen me do it. He shot straight over. Get back in there. Get back into bed. And when I come round, about an hour after, he come storming into the, who was really mad, he was storming into the bed. He said, I'm trying to get you well again. And you do a stupid trick like that. And I said, what? I said, you only kick the ball back. He said, get into that bed and get, you were flat again. He said, you could have, he said, this diphtheria weakens your heart. And he said, by doing that, he said, you could have undone all the good work I'm doing you. He said, now you get in that bed, he said, and if I see you out of that bed again, he said, I'll get an MP to come and stay there with you. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't really. So I got chuck up a bit about that, but I stayed in the bed after that until he said it was all right, and no kicking footballs about either when you get out. So you're allowed to get up and go, have a walk around, just more or less walking around the wards. And there was a lad there, I remember, who was from Newcastle, the next bed to me. And there was something wrong with his eyes. I don't know exactly what it was, but he couldn't read. And when he got letters, the nurse, the sister, used to read them out to him. So he asked me if I would write a letter to, he was married, and if I would write a letter to his wife. He said, I don't like telling the sisters and whatnot my business, he said. I was a Geordie, said, Newcastle. Darling, I was a Geordie. So he said, would you write a letter? I said, yeah, of course I would. So he said, dear, I don't know what they call him, dear Mary or something. I said, wait a minute, dear Mary? I said, it's your wife you're writing to. Oh, yeah. So we don't say dear Mary. Dear Mary's a friend. My dearest Mary or something. So I was in embellishing it a bit. And it doesn't say. She know it won't be off me, said, when you read all, I'll read it back to him. How's that? And I used to do that. And then when he's getting his mail come in, he said, will you read it to me? He said, not the sister, you know. So after a bit, when they were writing the letters, which were more or less all he had to do, I was explaining that I was in the next bed to him, like, and I was writing it on his behalf. I didn't say he couldn't see her out like that, because I didn't want to worry her about his condition. So I was his postman while I was there. He was a bit sorry when I left. Like, he was still in when I left.
As you improved, and you obviously you would start to eat, what was the food like you were getting? Was it basic? Or?
Oh, it was basic, but it was all right. All right. I remember, I don't know whether I've got this down in my little bit, but it must have been round about Christmas when we were in this place, because there was an officer come in with a gramophone, and there was a bit of a wireless plan, but this officer come in with a gramophone, and he was come round, is anything you'd like to hear, you know? And I was a big Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller fan at the time, still am. And I said, is there any Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw, something like that, man? And he was, I'll have a look. And somebody from the right at the bottom of the ward said, oh, they're rubbish, so and so. You know, he's carried a conversation on it, even though. And then that was the first time I'd ever heard Frank Sinatra. He was on the wireless, the radio, and I thought it was Crosby. And then the announcer said, you've just been listening to the latest singing sensation in the States, like Frank Sinatra.
Did you get touring people to come and entertain you in the hospital?
No.
So this was Christmas 1943?
Yeah. It was.
So as you recovered, you'd be able to move around?
Oh, yes, you could get about.
Did they give you jobs to do as you got stronger?
They're just tend to your bed and whatnot, like keep your bed space tidy, and help to dish out the breakfast and whatnot, you know, assist in the ward, put it that way. Not anything terribly heavy, you know.
You mentioned the padre coming around. Any other people, Salvation Army, any of those kind of people arrived?
No, there was no Salvation Army. There was the padres used to come round. But no Salvation Army.
I did ask you the question about the regimentation in the hospital.
Oh, yes, they started that. That was the beginning of it. When they come round, it was this fly to attention in your bed business, which I thought was ridiculous. But like a matron of the ward, she would come and orderly officer, there's in that sort of thing. It wouldn't be the orderly officer. It was the medical officer was coming round and sit to attention. If you were sat on a sit to attention or lie to attention or whatever. But that was about the only time. It was a ridiculous thing to say.
What time did they wake you up, you know, the day?
Again, I would think it'd be about 7-ish, 7 o'clock, something like that. And you'd be breakfast, the first thing they was to come around and wash you. maybe come around about 6:30, come round, and come on, wakey, wakey. And if you were bad, as weak as I was then, so you'd just sit up, and it's like a pyjama jacket, and just roll your hands out, and somebody would wash, give you a rub round off, and you're back to sleep again. But when you were better, of course, they brought the water, and you had your dish of water, and give yourself a wash. I don't remember much about baths. I think they used to come round and give you like a bed bath as such, but it wasn't a regular thing like.
How long were you hospitalised?
I never even thought about that. I was away from the company about 6 months, but that was from start to finish with two hospitals, and then going from when you were fit enough, you were sent to a convalescent camp, supposedly convalescent, and then you were back in uniform by this time.
So what happened to the convalescent camp?
You go to the convalescent camp, which was just outside Algiers, and under canvas again. And the first time I heard it was the worst time. Place was full of fleas, sand fleas. So you got your blankets, three blankets, and you went in your tent. And then you were told by the occupants, there'll be about another 4 or 5 if you're in there. You get a good night's sleep tonight because this will be your last one. Because after the first night, you found that you were fleas the next day, you know. And that was the routine. You sang your blankets out on the next morning and go up and down with a candle getting all the fleas out of the seams of your shirts and whatnot. Terrible place. And you were supposed to be convalescent there.
Did they give you anything special or different from the normal routine, being a convalescent camp?
Oh, yeah. They did and all. You were on routine marches all the time. First few days you were doing exercises and whatnot, and then they'd start you off on a 5 mile walk, a march. And me being a driver, I took very badly to that. And then the next day you'd go out maybe for another 5 mile march, and then you'd build up, you'd do about 8 miles. And then, but fortunately, we had a chap in our hut, our tent, I should say, and he'd got a job as an orderly in the office. And he went down, and he used to sleep in there in the office on the floor. But it was better than being bitten with fleas all the time. And he got posted back to his company or wherever. And he said, "There'll be wanting an orderly down there. Shall I put a word in for you?" I said, "Oh, yeah." So I got the job in the orderly office, just running about, taking messages and whatnot. So I got off the route marches, that's all I was bothered about, and also getting out of the tent. At least I was getting a bit of sleep on a night. You're supposed to be there, and if the phone rang, you had to, on a night, just taking messages off the phone.
Did the fleas or flies bother you when you were eating? And
not so much when you were eating. You were in the like a big mess room. When they didn't bother you as far as eating, just when you were sleeping, really. Oh, terrible. It's happened to me again later on, but that was another story.
What happened when you convalescent?
Well, after you'd been in there, after you'd been walking about, I did get into me and another Irish lad. We decided we'd go into Algiers for the day, but after we'd got about halfway there, we changed our minds and come back to the camp. It was too far away for walking, and then we were posted to another company, but it was like what they called a GRTD, General Reinforcement Training Depot. And yet that was, you went into there and waited to get posted to some other company. But fortunately for me, I was down in my paybook as a duck driver, qualified duck driver. So I was there until get in touch with the duck company. But that was just outside Algiers, so I was there for maybe 2 or 3 days, and then we went back to Naples, just outside Naples.
Was that a tented camp as well?
Yeah, that was all tents, yeah. Went back to just outside Naples in a Italian barracks, again just near another volcano.
How did they get you from Africa to Naples?
Well, it was go over on a troop ship. Didn't seem as big as the ones I've been in. That was
relatively short journey, was it?
Yeah, very short. Yeah. But we knew where we were going.
Had you been concerned that you may never get back to your?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I was worried, because I couldn't get in touch with them. I didn't know where they were, and. But when we went back to this place, this GRTD place, and they said about getting in touch, they said, oh, there's a rear party in Naples. Oh, I thought, thank the Lord for that. So the people in the camp, the officer, they got in touch with them to say that with. I did actually meet at breakfast time one day. I met two fitters out the workshop. Of course, by this time, they'd had the combined operations badge issued to them. You didn't get any extra pay. Apparently, the commandos and whatnot got about threatens or fourpence a day, but we didn't get. We were allowed to put the badge up.
What was the badge?
Combined operations, the flight, it was like anchor, wings, anchor, and a Tommy gun. Actually, we'd got that at Anzio. But I seen these lads and I said, well, where are you? Whereabouts are they? Where's the company now? I said, oh, they're at Anzio. And I said, well, what are you doing here? I said, oh, we've got the chance to get out, so we come out. And I was just waiting for the rear party to get in touch, and then the officer come out one day. Well, I had to go to the office, and he said, get your kit packed. He said, your company's coming for you tomorrow. So.
And that was the same company as you'd served?
Same company I was with all the time, except I didn't know these blokes who were on the rear party. Like they were.
How long were you in Naples before that happened?
Not long. Just days. I remember the cook from Hartlepool, and a few, maybe about half a dozen, and there was one or two that had been sent back from Anzio, a bit bomb happy and whatnot, and recuperating. And I piled up with a chap who was a lance corporal in my company, and he put me wise to what had happened, and we'd only been in there about 2 or 3 days, and there was transport going up and down there all the time.
I was going to ask you what you were doing in those 2 or
nothing,
3 days.
Nothing, just doing one or two fatigues around the cookhouse, that's all. Most of the time you were just keeping out the road ready for when you got back. And there was, like I said, there was transport going up and down by sea, up and down to Anzio. So
did you get much chance to get into Naples itself?
Well, we're in, but I thought it was a dirty place myself. They were offering you all sorts of entertainment, shall we say, little boys. Come round, you want to sleep with my sister? I mean, it's marvellous, and they were speaking English and all, you know. I suppose a lot of them had been come back from America, you know, and back to Naples. But, and there was restaurants and things like that, bars more, not so much restaurants, but the bars, and that way I could go and I had my first cherry brandy in a bar with this lad, and he said, first time I tell something. Oh, it's all right, cherry brandy there. Oh. But I was glad to get out. I wanted to be back with the company, you know.